Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with an OBGYN who is a pioneer in the menopause care field, passionately dedicated to helping women with healthcare issues and concerns. Dr. Barb Dupree has been a women's health provider for more than 20 years and a menopause care specialist for the past seven. She was recently named the 2013 Certified Menopause Practitioner of the Year by the North American Menopause Society for exceptional contributions to menopause care. In particular, the award recognized the outreach, communication, and education she does through Middlesex MD and her work as Director of the Women's Midlife Services at Holland Hospital, Holland, Michigan. So welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about what Middlesex MD means and why did you want to create this entity?
Well, my background is in women's health. I'm a gynecologist. And about 8 to 10 years ago, I started to refocus my practice on women in midlife, perimenopause, and menopause. And I quickly came to the understanding that women's sexual health was very frequently an area of concern for women. And as I spent more time trying to understand this, I realized that women were quite dissatisfied, frustrated, and at a loss for some solutions and answers as to why those changes were occurring. It also happened to be in tandem with a time I was going back working on a master's of medical management, and during the coursework, there was the assignment of considering a business startup and what that might look like and how you might expand professionally. So I decided to go ahead and implement my plan for bringing a reliable, credible, clinically relevant website where women could seek and find sexual health answers and as well as maybe solutions and products to address their concerns.
And why the passion about women's issues and women's health, women's pelvic health, their sexuality at midlife?
Again, when I spent a little more time asking women about this, delving into this, and partly because I have an 8-page questionnaire as my intake with about 10 questions regarding sexual health, it was such a consistent area of concern and dissatisfaction. And I realized that when women are able to express and understand and address the concerns, the outcome of that is really fairly overwhelming for them personally, but then also, of course, in the relationship that they're in. And I think when you look at couples who get to their 40, 50, 60 age of life, empty nest, trying to recreate what life is going to look like moving forward, sexuality and intimacy has a big role there. And when it's not going well and there are some issues, oftentimes that relationship suffers significantly because of that. So it also felt like a critical path of just relationship success.
Let's talk a little bit about the physiology of it all. How does that impact the emotional and the spiritual?
One of the ways I try to help women understand what's going on or what's happening or will be happening, I talk about specifically the menopause transition and the hormones and how they are impacted. I describe to women that estrogen is a significant hormone for women, and it probably plays a bigger role in functionality for our brain, our skin, our bones, our breasts, our genitals. It plays a bigger role throughout our body than most other hormones like thyroid, insulin, cortisol. And it is unique in that we experience really complete organ failure, i.e. menopause, and generally speaking, we don't address it. We don't advocate for replacing those lost hormones like we would hypothyroidism and thyroid failure. You'd be put on thyroid hormone right away. Pancreatic failure, you'd be put on insulin. So it's a really unique time physiologically where a major player that's been supplying significant hormones over decades is really mostly completely absent now. So your body really has to do some major adjustments to accommodate that, primarily the brain. That's a huge target organ for hormones. So not only the brain, but skin and bones and genitals. And so there's quite wide-sweeping changes that women may experience. Interestingly, many women transition through this phase of life and have nearly no symptoms related to it. So I think the medical field doesn't really understand why women experience this so variably. I think it's a little bit like women who are menstruating and having cyclic related symptoms as well. For some women, they don't know that it's 3 days before their period, and other women just feel awful at that time of their cycle. Why is it? We don't know. Same thing in menopause. The absence of the hormones requires a lot of adjustment. And I think the brain, especially, that plays out in mood, emotion, hot flashes, memory, focus, concentration. And that's a surprise for many women.
So what are the more common maladies which do occur? You just mentioned a few. What else?
Of course, we all associate hot flashes with menopause, common. And that may disrupt sleep. It may make you doing your work and moving through your day difficult. But then it is mood-related, might be depression, anxiety. I probably hear anxiety most. And then I think probably what is least talked about and takes women most by surprise is what happens sexually.
Let's talk about that. What happens sexually? Or what can happen?
Well, the area of your body that is most intimately connected to estrogen and estrogen receptors is going to be your genitals, your vulva and vagina. So for many women in perimenopause or later in menopause, they begin to experience more difficulty with arousal and orgasm. They begin to experience more vaginal dryness, less lubrication, which may translate to painful intercourse. They have some awareness often of loss of desire or drive. So when you combine a loss of desire, maybe more discomfort related to sex, it now takes longer to achieve orgasm. It's a perfect storm to begin to avoid having intercourse or being intimate with your partner.
What advice do you offer women who are struggling in that way?
I think the first thing to talk about is that it's not uncommon to experience all these things. The statistic is within 4 to 5 years of menopause, up to 50% of women are going to be having pain related to intercourse. If you don't know that's expected, you're probably not going to ask about it, talk about it, or seek out solutions. But if you understand it may happen as you're moving toward it, maybe before it's actually painful, you might begin to ask, what can I do about this? And there are lots of solutions. For instance, vaginal dryness. We talk about vaginal lubricants. Lubricants are something you take and use at the time you're going to have intercourse to add more moistness and less friction to make intercourse more comfortable at that time. They don't do much in between episodes of sex. That's where a vaginal moisturizer can be beneficial. Those are over-the-counter non-hormonal products that are placed intravaginally on a regular basis to try to maintain some vaginal moisture and minimize the progression to dryness.
Are you suggesting that women use vaginal moisturizers even when their aim is not intercourse?
I am. And that's an interesting conundrum because I do meet many women who are not in a relationship presently, maybe never have, or they're presently not in a relationship, don't anticipate they're going to be. The vagina absolutely has some of that use it or lose it phenomena. So if you're 50 and single, and your next sexual encounter is a decade from now when you become involved in the next relationship, I promise you the expectation of what's going to happen sexually is going to be disappointing. It's not going to be what it once was. So for pelvic health, we do want women to be somewhat proactive, and we talk about pelvic tone and maintaining pelvic tone, which includes the Kegel exercises, but there are pelvic floor tools and devices that can actually give you some feedback on how you're doing in maintaining pelvic strength, which is important sexually, but also important for bladder and bowel function. So like so many areas of our body and our lives, we are just more high maintenance. And I point that out to women that it takes more to get the desired outcome of your skin, of your vision, of your general health and weight maintenance, and that is absolutely true sexually. So if it's important to you, if you want it to continue to be pleasurable and important to you, you need to put in some effort in achieving that.
What are some of the positives about being in menopause?
I think women welcome the absence of periods, number one. So that's always a happy time for most women, and it can free them up regarding what that might mean for fertility and pregnancy. Most women have addressed that in some way before reaching menopause, but not all women. So it is a new phase there. For many women, it coincides with fewer demands from children, as they're often young adults and moving on. So this discovery of self, I see many women making significant career decisions around this time, relationship decisions. I think they feel more confident. I think they have more vision of how they want the next 30 or 40 years to look, so they're more direct in trying to achieve those goals.
How do women find the best way to navigate any number of these issues?
Certainly information, and it's a little difficult now with the internet having so many sources of information, of which many of them are not particularly reliable. So I am a member of the North American Menopause Society. They do have a website, menopause.org, which provides menopause-related information for consumers. It's a resource for providers as well. I think it's helpful for women to understand how comfortable is their provider, their nurse practitioner, PA, or physician in having these discussions, and what's their level of understanding in addressing it. For many women, they won't necessarily need prescription therapy, but they do need to have accurate information. I think critical to success here is improving lifestyle. I think we're often at that stage coming out of the busyness of kids and careers and have sort of put yourself low on the needs list. So I tell women, this is a time I want you to be at the top of the to-do list and discover exercise maybe for the first time or reinvent what that looks like for you. I honestly think exercise is probably the most important thing women can spend their time or money doing that's going to get a favorable outcome in navigating this time of life. Certainly sleep and diet nutrition. So the studies tell us that women around age 50 are most likely to adapt new habits and are really open for change. So part of the fun of practicing with women at this stage is they actually take to heart some of the advice we give and make important changes in their health. Many women are also coming upon the diagnosis of other chronic conditions, maybe a diagnosis of diabetes or high blood pressure, maybe adding medications that's affecting their quality of life. And so that sometimes is an impetus for them to carefully look at their lifestyle. And I think we underestimate the impact we can have in our day-to-day routines and how that plays out in our health.
My understanding of the role of hormones is that they, in and of themselves, sort of keep buoyed a lot of other issues.
Well, I would say it this way. I would say that our understanding of estrogen, probably specifically estrogen, we won't talk about some of the other hormones, but estrogen probably is protective to our health. It's certainly bone protective. It's probably cardiovascular protective. It's probably brain protective. And so when we lose estrogen, that typically is when we'll see lipids begin to increase, blood pressure begin to increase, risk of diabetes begin to increase. Does that mean estrogen therapy is a solution for all of those and will postpone the diagnosis of those? I think that's where our healthcare and science is trying to best understand what role do hormones play in prevention or not. And I think there's still work to be done. There's been a lot of confusion about the safety of hormone therapy coming out of the research over a decade ago, which unfortunately was targeted to women much older, and we do understand that initiating hormones in a quite a bit older population probably isn't ideal depending on their baseline health risks. So it does get complicated, I think our understanding of cancer is more related to aging. As we age, our cells make mistakes, and cancers arise in our colon, our kidney, our brain, our breast. Age is a primary risk factor for many cancer development, and there just has to be more attention paid to understanding what your risks are based on your lifestyle, your family history, and other disease processes.
What do you say to women who never experienced much anxiety or never experienced sleep issues or didn't experience much depression, who are suddenly and what feels like instantaneously smacked with these situations, these feelings? How do you address this with them?
You have described a patient that I see every day just now, and it is remarkable to me that for many women, this change is impactful, often in a negative way, on so many aspects of their life. And it's equally interesting to understand that for a subset of those women, hormones is the piece of the path of restoring some of that. I would say it's not true for every woman. So when I hear women describe what you've just said, I'm more irritable, I have feelings of being anxious, my sleep is disrupted, I can't focus like I used to, I usually will say, do you think this has anything to do with hormones? How do you think menopause or hormones might play a role for you? Women are often able to very accurately articulate what they've observed and the connection of how this has transpired very closely in relationship to their menopausal transition. Unfortunately, for most of those women, they will very favorably respond to hormone therapy. And whether that's 6 months or 6 years or 36 years of hormone therapy, it's very variable. But there are also mood medications. We can introduce an antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication at that time. So there are options for women to address these. Is it an antidepressant, a sleep aid, and, you know, something for their constipation, or is it hormone therapy? I don't know. So my goal really is to try to help women understand what may or may not be hormone related. You know, do you put everything in the hormone bucket? No. Aging has something to do with this, lifestyle stress. It isn't always solely related to menopause. So trying to understand what the difference is for each individual is really kind of an individual journey in regaining health and wellness.
We're talking today with a powerhouse in the field of women's health care, Dr. Barb Dupree. She can be found at MiddlesexMD.com. Speaking of Middlesex, let's go back to the issue of midlife. It seems that in the last 10 years, midlife, whether it's midlife mothering, midlife crisis, there's such an emphasis on this stage of life, when in truth, every woman in the history of mankind went through this stage of life without there being this amount of scrutiny, analysis. Tell me a little bit more about why you might think this age and stage has come to the forefront in terms of society's reactions.
Well, I'm in that age demographic, and I would say my observation is that our mothers, generally speaking, did this stage of life with probably fewer demands. Fewer women had careers. Many of us postponed our families because we were pursuing careers, so we are parenting at a little older age, potentially. Our parents are living longer and living longer with chronic conditions, so we are now parenting our parents, so to speak, in their 80s, 90s, and helping them navigate often multiple chronic conditions. Often distance is a factor because the nuclear family often is more spread out, so we have to take more time and effort in connecting and in delivering that connection and care to family. So I think we've created a culture that is placing more demands. I also think our generation just expects more. We want to continue to be as active and productive as long as we can. And I remember, a grandmother in her 60s thinking, wow, she's pretty old. She's, slowing down. She's not getting out that much. And I think now, back to that, that would never be an average 60-year-old's expectation of what her life would look like. So it's a combination of things, not to mention the readiness and the availability of information.
It seems like it's the perfect zeitgeist where women are beset by sometimes maladies, sometimes emotional issues, sometimes very serious physical issues. And at the same time, they're navigating a brave new world. Would you agree?
Yes. And I think, the generation before us, unfortunately, didn't have many treatment options we now have. And I think there was a significant suffering that went on, so to speak. And I often will have a 45-year-old woman come in saying, oh, my word, I am so terrified of what's ahead. This was so difficult for my mother. She didn't come out of her bedroom for days and weeks at a time. My parents' marriage didn't survive this. I need to do this differently. And, her mother didn't have access to the knowledge or maybe treatment options that we now have available to us. And maybe having seen it not go well for some women who've been through this stage, we really want to make sure we do it differently.
So if we have this proliferation of websites and online information dedicated to this stage and age of life, why do many women remain reluctant to seek help and more reluctant to talk about it? Because I can recall for myself that I've always been very vocal about perimenopause and then menopause, and everyone would respond by saying to me, oh, I'm so happy you've said this. I've never spoken about this to anyone. That's an incredible amount of shame that women must be carrying around, correct?
That is such an interesting point, because women typically share so much. But this does seem to be an area that we're not talking about at our book clubs or our coffee time with friends. And I'm not sure. I guess it's the feeling that what I'm experiencing may not be common to others, or I'm just not comfortable diving that deep and sharing this kind of information with a friend. And, there have been surveys done, and, for instance, 44% of women who were having painful intercourse had never talked about that with their provider. So about half of women who were having a significant impact to their quality of life never brought it up with their provider to talk about a solution. And up to 62% of women didn't connect it to a menopausal-related condition, so didn't know that there was a solution as well, just saw it as just typical aging. And then, unfortunately, many providers aren't bringing it up to their patients either, so women aren't necessarily feeling welcomed to have this discussion because it hasn't been brought up by their provider. So if it's not going to be mentioned, women amongst themselves, women to their provider, providers aren't going to talk about it to their patients, then I think our alternative is opportunities like this, the internet, some print materials, trying to just spread the word of what experiences women might have and how they might find solutions to be more successful in navigating that.
When we're talking about women and menopause and perimenopause, can you give me some sort of relative age that this mechanism starts and some relative average age that it stops?
So the average age of menopause for an American woman is 51, and we all experience menopause naturally between age 40 and 58 as a rule, 99% of us. Of course, there's surgical menopause or chemotherapy-induced menopause. So there are other conditions that may cause it to be earlier. So anytime after age 40, women might spontaneously stop having periods. The hormonal changes that precede that, on average, are probably going to be 6 to 8 years of women beginning to experience some symptoms that are changing, a change in periods, some interval or intermittent night sweats or hot flashes, some vaginal dryness beginning to occur, some sleep disruption. So it's quite variable, once women are menopausal, the symptoms related to menopause, generally speaking, are temporal, and hot flashes will, for the majority of women, subside. 10 to 15% of them likely will have hot flashes for life, but for up to 90% of us, they will diminish over years, but it may take 6 to 8 to 14 years for that to subside. The symptom that is never going to get better in menopause, so when you talk about when will it be over, the one symptom that will never be over, so to speak, it is chronic and progressive, is vulvovaginal atrophy or progressive vaginal dryness leading to pain related to intercourse. So many women are remote from menopause. They're 60. Last period was 8 years ago, and now they're starting to have pain related to intercourse. So, of course, they don't necessarily associate with menopause because their symptoms occurred so many years ago. So I try to remind women around the time of menopause and saying you may not be having any vaginal dryness or difficulty with intercourse or recurring bladder infections or urinary frequency and urgency. That may happen in 2 years. It may happen in 20 years. When you're noticing changes related to that, we do have treatment options. We need to talk about it further, so let me know. So in a way, menopausal women are always menopausal and are likely to always have some related symptoms to that.
Where do you envision that the next 10 years will take us in terms of technology, our comfort level with this discussion?
I think our further understanding of how hormones affect women and hopefully having more individual ability to predict and understand that. I'm hopeful that there will be more clear understanding of the safety or risk associated with using hormone therapy. I think women are going to continue to be more proactive about gathering information and hopefully seeking treatment options sooner rather than later to optimize their outcomes and maintain sexuality, for instance, which is where I spend a lot of my time and focus. When you look at the likelihood of a relationship being successful long-term, intimacy and sexual health is a major player in that. It just is.
What tip or two would you like to leave the listener with today?
Lifestyle matters more, and I think being very intentional about addressing habits of diet, exercise, and sleep will have significant impact on quality of life. And I think knowledge around the stage of life, the age you're in, and anticipation of what might occur as a result of that so you can be proactive.
We've been talking today with a powerhouse in the field of women's health care, OBGYN Dr. Barb Dupree, can be found at www.middlesexmd.com. Dr. Dupree, I really appreciate your input, your feedback, your information, your willingness to discuss this. I think we could not be discussing this enough to be helping women who are so confused about all of these issues. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you to the listener for joining us during this really fascinating half hour. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. And until next time, I hope you take care.